Welcome to Add to Party, a friendship simulator masquerading as a new show. I'm your host, James Hartwell, and I'm joined by
Charles, and I'm joined by
Andy K.
Nice. Evening, gentlemen.
Good evening.
Yeah, good evening. I took a nap and I woke up.
Oh, let me tell you, this is going to quickly turn into old man podcast. Ooh. I also took a nap.
Didn't you feel well rested, a little bit more energized for the next few hours?
Well, what happened was I fell asleep in my office chair for an hour and a half. And then I went and laid in bed for another hour and a half.
Yeah. I don't know if I could fall asleep in this chair.
Mm. That means it's not good enough to Andy. Mm. You need a better chair.
Well, it just cries every time I move in it. Like, can you hear this?
No, thankfully.
No?
Why does your chair cry? How old is it?
I don't know. It's probably part my weight and part because I haven't put WD-40 on it. You have to take it apart. Come on. Who's going to do that? Come on. I literally looked at it and there's like a little straw in those WD-40 things. So I just started squirting at it because I was like, it'll get there eventually. And then it didn't. But apparently you can't hear it. So what is it? I'm going Andy, wild over.
Are you walking in and out? Because you suddenly like fade away.
Oh, that's me leaning back in my chair.
That's right. Andy in relax mode.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad I got to take you guys on that journey. You're making me feel a little bit less self-conscious though about this squeaky chair.
Well, again, how old is this chair?
I don't know. Like a didn't year? You?
Maybe this was new though, right? This was
well
this,
new to chair. Me. I bought it off of someone.
Yeah, the chair hunt.
You bought a used chair?
Yeah, they didn't want it anymore.
The fuck is wrong with you?
They didn't use it much. I mean, I don't know what happened on the chair, okay? But I'm going to assume it was holy and pious. And I got it for a good price.
Yeah, some people call those alone times holy. So.
There's a ritual involved and they ascend to a higher plane.
It was so, $50.
Some descriptions
bucks is a good
can
price
be described as
chair.
Worship, you know. Yeah, 50 it's bucks. 50. That's great. You're paying you pay for that what you get, right?
I did. I think it's a great chair.
Yeah. Well, it's $50 and you can't fall asleep in it, whereas Charles and I
I'll be okay. I got a couch. I'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, that's it. Well, here's something you should care about, Andy.
I'm ready to care. Tell me about it.
Ubisoft says, fuck you, AAA. We're going free to play.
Oh, my God.
I mean, so in a recent earnings call today, as a matter of fact, the CFO had a quote where they're going, in line with the evolution of our high quality lineup that is increasingly diverse, which holy shit, he could put more just business acronyms in there. We are moving on from our prior comment, which I think should be commitment. I'm not sure, but
yeah, I think it's commitment.
Commitment regarding 3 to 4 premium AAAs per year. It is indeed no longer a proper indication of our value creation dynamics. For example, our expectation for Just Dance and Riders Republic is their BMX game. They released, I think, last spring, are consistent with some of the industry's AAA performers. Additionally, we are building high-end free-to-play games to be trending towards AAA ambitions over the long term. This is a purely financial communication evolution and doesn't change the fact that we continue to expect a high cadence of content delivery, including powerful, premium, and free-to-play new releases. That's a lot of work to say, give me them loot boxes.
Yeah.
This was so painful to read. I don't know why it made me so mad, but it's like that dance, right? The language of nothing, right? You fill it with these words that are so vacant. And like, what was it? Value creation dynamics?
Yeah, that's the one where I felt my heart sink just a little
bit. Oh my God. Was this to investors?
Yeah. This was an earnings call.
Do they hear this and like are they filled with like confidence or do they also groan? Are we all playing a game that we're all embarrassed of?
No. They stroke their beards and light their cigars with their $100 bills and go, yes, yes. Value creation dynamics. I will continue to add your stock to my portfolio.
Oh, God. It's just, ugh. Yeah. I don't know if it's making me sick or maybe this beer. I don't know how I feel about it. It's got honey.
Why not both?
Maybe it's both, but it's spiraling me out of control that no one is embarrassed to say those words. They must be. They must know what they're doing. Was this Jim Ryan?
No, this was Frederick Dugo. I'm assuming because it's French and silent.
I don't know. I'm getting upset to an unreasonable point, but I also think it's kind of sad. Because Ubisoft, at least in my mind, right, they were the only ones, not the only ones, I'm exaggerating, but they invested in the single player experience, right? And they iterated, you know, very slowly, but they weren't afraid to throw a ton of money and create a big AAA single player experience. And now even they are dropping it, right? What are they going to do? Is Assassin's... They even mentioned at the bottom, Assassin's Creed had its biggest year. Its biggest year. Let's pivot to free-to-play.
Well, and Andy, also, I mean, we didn't talk about it, but I think last week, or maybe it was during this week, I lose track of these things, but they announced that they're releasing a free-to-play version of The Division called The Division Heartland, which... You know, when I think about Middle America, I think about lots of cover and not rolling fields of flatness.
How do you put a cover-based shooter in the desert?
Not the desert, Andy. Not the
it's
Middle
the
East.
Desert.
Wait, is it in the desert?
I don't know.
It's in Heartland, so I'm assuming it's in Middle America.
The picture
like
is slightly tan, and only the desert is tan.
I'm thinking it's not, Andy. I'm thinking it's in like Middle America, like Kansas, Iowa. You know, flat places.
Oh, I guess, but then you're just hiding in grain. Who cares about grain?
Exactly.
I don't know.
Lots of hiding in tall wheat. Yeah. I mean, they also released Hyperscape last year, which was Battle Royale, which I never played. It kind of looked like a little bit of a mix of say an Overwatch and, It had a lot of kind of a Bulletstorm almost, where there was a lot of like fast movement and aerial combat, but you know, in a battle royale space. So they've been kind of transitioning this for a while. They also talked about Riders Republic and what was the other game? Just Dance. Yeah, Just Dance. We are not the audience for Just Dance, right? But Just Dance, I think, is consistently one of their best sellers.
You know what? God bless. I love it for them. Yeah, it's interesting. I guess it's another one. I'm wondering, do they just look at that Fortnite money? Not everyone's going to get Fortnite money.
You don't need to get Fortnite money.
You can remember shoot for the moon and land amongst the stars. That's a lot. There's a lot of money in microtransactions, as you know, we've all learned over the past many years. And
that's Bobby Kotick's favorite thing.
Yeah, I mean, so here's like the issue, right? It's got to be profitable for everybody to switch over to a more microtransaction model, because you know we prey on people's psychology to pay more, to spend more, and gamble. Which, you know, you would hope there'd be, we finally start moving towards that regulations that's been being threatened over the past few years on all these microtransactions. Because if we don't, we're just going to end up, everybody has almost no good reason to keep it within just the AAA space and should just move into microtransactions.
Genshin Impact, I think, came out for PS4, PS5 this week.
Mm-hmm.
Noted Breath of the Wild gacha simulator, which honestly, Genshin Impact's one of those games where I've been waiting for it to come to consoles because I tried playing it on PC or mobile and I'm like, this doesn't feel good. When Genshin Impact comes to Switch, I think I'm really going to get into it, which I have no idea why it's not there already.
Well, I like the problem with Genshin Impact, and you know, it's been the problem since its release last winter, or you know, last quarter of last year. There's not really, it's so, you can fly through that story and hit the dead end, and then you're just like, what am I doing? So hopefully they resolve that. And they still made a lot of money. Their percentage, their percentages on their units are so fucking low. It is insane.
Well, it's so, and you know, it's funny too, because Charles, you are our gacha expert, right?
Mm-hmm. I'm playing one right now. It's in my hand. Just type. But yeah, go ahead.
I was say you. I think you turned me on to another Eden probably like 3-4 months ago at this point, mm-hmm. and I saw it come out for PlayStation like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and I went, "Oh, I actually know that game." And a lot of people were like, "What is this game? Another Eden? A Cat in Time? What a weird game!" And I went, "Oh wait, I actually know what that is."
It's actually that I'll say another Eden is pretty good. It's not a bad game. The only thing about it right now is I just didn't have enough time, and then I feel like I lost the lead when I kept playing.
But what do you mean, cool. Lead? Like the story?
Like I couldn't catch up to all the good people.
No.
yeah.
In other Ubisoft news, just kind of rounding it out, Skull and Bones, their pirate game, which I believe was announced right after Assassin's Creed Rogue, known Xbox 360 title, was delayed yet again. So their pirate game is maybe coming out April of 2022. And then you're also going to be having later this year, Far Cry 6 and Rainbow Six Quarantine, the first-person shooter.
Ooh.
Maybe coming out this year as well, in addition to Riders Republic. So Riders Republic isn't out. That's right. I thought maybe I'm thinking of Steep. That's what I'm thinking of. Riders Republic, Division Heartland, and Roller Champions, which I have not heard about. Roller Champions.
What the hell is that?
We're going to find out together right now.
Pop it
Roller
open.
Right click. Roller Champions is an upcoming free-to-play sports game. Okay, let's see a video of this.
There's the Fortnite.
Oh, it was an E3 2019. Okay. Oh, okay, so it's kind of
like destruction. It's like a roller derby or roller ball.
Yeah.
the movie with those stars. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's roller ball, like, you know, where you skate around in a circle, but gamified.
Oh, what a butt shot.
Hmm. I mean, whatever. Someone will like it.
Yeah.
That's the thing about a lot of these games. Just, you know, I guess this is the strategy going forward, right? Is where we're like, yeah, broad audience appeal. That's cool. We just want to get like the 100,000 people who are willing to spend, you know, $500 on our game once a year.
Yeah. Chase the whale.
Yeah.
They need Chasing to make the whale. Art more interesting. It looks really boring.
I mean, that's Ubisoft, right? Yeah.
They might have something there. Maybe if they made it like more cartoonish, or maybe if they just made it look like Jack Ryan Radio, that'd be awesome.
I mean, what was the game? Phoenix Rising, Eternals,
Immortals, Phoenix Rising, Phoenix spelled with an F and a Y.
Yeah, yeah, Phoenix Rising, Immortals. Yeah, the dumbest game in the world.
They really that game. That one.
Yeah, I still haven't played that game. By all accounts, it was acceptable, yeah. Right?
People
I
liked it.
Got the job done.
Yeah,
yeah.
I heard the name was a marketing decision. I heard it was going to be called something else, but then they stepped in and changed the name.
What was the original name? Which was a lot better.
I think it was just called like Phoenix or something, or more. Yeah. I don't know what it was.
I thought it was also not good, but this one was worse.
Hold on. Now I have to Google it, because if I don't remember, I won't be happy. It's Phoenix Rising original name. Gods and Monsters. I don't know. It does kind of... Gods and Monsters reminds me of the Will Wright game, Black and White.
Black and
That's
White.
That's literally what I thought. I was thinking Black and White, and I was like, oh, was that Will Wright?
Because we're old.
I thought that was Peter Molyneux.
That's Peter Molyneux.
Oh, that's Peter Molyneux. Excuse me.
Yeah.
How dare I confuse Will Wright and Peter Molyneux?
How dare you?
One was a man who delivered,
Exactly.
I played Spore.
Yeah. Listen, he gets one bad one.
That's fair. That's
fair.
That's okay.
What's Will Wright doing nowadays?
Yeah, what is Will Wright doing nowadays?
I hope he's doing well. He deserves the rest.
He left EA to run Stupid Fun Club Camp, an entertainment think tank in which Wright and EA are principal shareholders. Think tanks are always nothing.
I only hear about them in like the context of politics, and they just want to stop people from voting.
A think tank. Yeah. That's a think tank, generally speaking, it's kind of the same thing as a consulting group, but less requirement to actually deliver anything tangible.
Yeah. You don't have to deliver.
Right.
Yeah.
We just need you to find a creative way to break the rules. Right. Yeah. How can you do this? And like, what a lofty name though, a think tank, right? It's kind of, I don't want to think that Will Wright is trying to impede on our rights. He's too good of a guy.
Well, maybe. Well, this know. One's about entertainment, so he probably does, but in a way that gives you games.
Maybe.
I mean, he's maybe interested in the politics of microtransactions.
Yeah,
but probably not voting.
Right. That's fair.
But let me tell Andy. Let me tell you something in terms of shocking decisions made by think tanks.
I need to hear this right now.
Yakuza will be a turn-based game going forward.
Do you understand the peace that is washing over me as I hear this? I finally beat my infinity run of Like a Dragon, by the way.
Oh,
wow. An excellent game. What an excellent game. And to hear that the series is going to continue as turn-based. Well, I think I have a more important qualifier. Honestly, the turn-based combat was okay. They were very creative, but the actual moveset kind of, I don't know, felt bloated. But what I mean to say is I need another game starring Ichiban and his
Ichiban
friends.
Ichiban Kasuga.
I need more of these characters. All right?
Yeah.
Their friendship made me cry. Like, it is so beautiful. And it's just like the trope of the power of friendship just aged up. And it is wonderful to help your adult friends go through their adult issues. It is so beautiful. And to have this series continue is just, I feel it in my chest right now, a real joy. And I cannot wait for the next one. I am day one. I am there.
What if it's on Xbox?
Why did you say that?
Because that's what happened this last time. And he came
Why
out. And
did you say that?
It came out in November. That's when I played it. The real Yakuza fan.
I can't do this.
No. But just to kind of even out the discussion, there was a recent kind of a mini conference or, you know, state of play, not state of play, but, you know, the developer had kind of a thing to announce their new game, Lost Judgment. So Judgment, which also just came out or just got a remaster, came out about a month ago, is basically set in the same world of Yakuza. But instead of playing a former Yakuza, you play as a lawyer / private investigator, exposing a deep conspiracy that goes all the way to the top.
Have you played it?
No, I've watched someone play it, but I haven't played it yet. So they also announced during this Lost Judgment, which will be the sequel to that game, Judgment series is going to continue to be the brawler, with Yakuza then becoming a turn-based series, which I think is pretty good, right? Because we don't have a lot of turn-based series anymore. We have Persona, and we have Pokemon.
Yeah, like it is truly turn-based.
Yeah.
No ATB or anything. It was it was really, really nice. Oh, I loved that game.
Yeah, I kind of, to be honest with you, the developers here, I was just like, well, they're just going to, they get to have their cake and eat it too. They were just like, we're going to split this up between these two games. Like, they already have a good system with the original Yakuza, you know, brawling. That's okay. And then they were like, we can also just make a turn-based game. And honestly, they could have done it either way. They could have made one. They could have just flipped it around and made the other one a turn-based if they wanted to. But to be honest with you, the smarter move would likely have been this switch with the Yakuza series, because the Yakuza, yeah, I feel like the Yakuza series is more popular. So they're like, you know, we'll keep the turn-based here, and then we already have an established, you know, brawling system. We'll just put it in the other game, which so if people like the old version, they'll just play this series instead. Yeah,
I'm debating playing Judgment. Should I play it?
It was fun.
Will it be like, I loved Like a Dragon so much.
Andy, what I recommend is playing Yakuza 0, because Yakuza 0 is kind of the best version of Yakuza Brawler.
Mm-hmm.
If you like that and you like the combat in Yakuza 0, then it probably makes sense for you to play Judgment. Although you might also then go on to play Yakuza Kiwami 1 and Yakuza Kiwami 2.
Sure. And that's one thing I've been trying to figure out. Do I love Like a Dragon as an RPG, or do I like it as, is it just that I like a Yakuza game? But it also made me start thinking, like, I formed, and I think this is, maybe it's not right to say unique to RPGs, but a strong part of RPGs, is that I'm playing a game that's 60 hours, and with RPGs, you spend so much time with your party that you grow so close to them. Even just controlling them in battle and hearing, you know, their voice snippets and all that stuff, I create such a close bond. And Like a Dragon allowed me to do that with a cast of, I think, like 6 or 7 characters. Can a Yakuza game where it's a single brawler, at least as far as I know, it's only a single character, can I form those same deep relationships and cry when they talk about friendship?
Oh, I mean, that still happens, right? In all the other Yakuza games, the other characters are an important part of the story. They're not necessarily there in every moment, but like every kind of cutscene involves them. It's not super often that Kiryu is carrying a scene by himself, and that's also because Kiryu is kind of a stoic guy, so he needs other people to react for him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why there's always side characters in a Yakuza game, because, you know, Kiryu is always this very stoic, very quiet person, so you need other people to react and say things, because why would Kiryu say those? That'd be out of character. Yeah.
Listen, and Ichiban is not afraid.
Yeah. Ichiban doesn't know anything, which is great from a story perspective.
Oh my god, I love that game so much. I don't know, but now it's got me like on an RPG kick, and it's just, oh, I'm so content. I'm so thrilled. I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, although Yakuza 7 is a great game.
It was wonderful. Although I might need to talk with some people about the battle system. I don't know if I actually really ever knew how it worked, but that's a conversation for later.
I do think a lot of sins in Yakuza 7, like, there was a pretty bad XP curve in there. And then...
only once.
Only once. And they did warn you. They're like, hey, we can't balance this, so just grind for a little bit. Yeah. But I think those can be forgiven as them trying to figure it out and get a little more.
It's their first RPG.
Yeah. I'm just happy to hear. I was like, would I play a brawler with Ichiban? I'm like, I guess that would be fun, but I don't know. I like the kind of nonsensical world they've created with the Like a Dragon series, where you can get to a point where you can summon a satellite from space to blow people up.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Or, you know, a gang of Yakuza into a diaper fetish. It's great. Yeah. Summon them both.
Andy, would you believe that that's actually a long-running joke through the Yakuza series?
Oh, I didn't know that. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I laughed a lot when I saw it.
They appear in a lot of games.
They're awesome.
Yeah.
And it had a beautiful message about being a mother and how difficult it is. Like, it was, oh, God, I love this game. I love it. I love it.
I like those sighs, like a very wistful lover.
I'm flooded with joy. It's sad to see it done, but I think it was ready to be done.
Yeah.
So
the only bad part about the Judgment series is that there's no karaoke in it. which is a big part of Yakuza. Yep.
Yeah, the karaoke was great too.
I think the issue with that is that the VA for the voice actor for the main character of the Judgment series is actually a fairly well-renowned singer.
Oh.
Like, he's a singer before he's a voice actor. So I don't think Sega can afford him to sing.
Okay. I guess that's fair. I was also really impressed with the English voice acting in Like a Dragon. Like, holy
Oh, did you
cow.
Do English for Like a Dragon?
Yeah. Knocked it out of the park. It was excellent.
It actually I thought that it was fine at least the first 2 hours that I played it. And then I switched.
Did you not finish Like a Dragon?
No, it's a, I didn't have time.
I should go back.
No, I know. Right with everything else that's happening.
I know. You know, with Returnal and
that's it. Other Returnal, games. Mass Effect. That's it. Monster Hunter Rise, because now it has an ending.
Ooh. Yeah, I know. I do need to get back to Rise.
It's insane. It's just stuff to do.
Ew.
The Andy's
shot on
reacting
screen is kind of gross.
Andy's reacting to the trailer for Lost Judgment, which included
a decomposing body.
There it is, a decomposing body with like bugs all over it.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, look at that pretty boy. Look at him. He also wears a deep, deep crew neck. Like it goes down to like mid pec. Mm-hmm. Which I'm like, such a Japanese like pretty boy thing.
Hey, if you're a detective and can pull it off, why not?
That's right.
Go for it.
But you know what? You know what else? What else needed investigation, Andy?
I don't know.
Well, that's how much game devs are getting paid.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
So let's how to contextualize this. So game developers have been getting a bad break for a long time.
Yeah.
Basically it's a passion industry, right? So there's always a talent group of people waiting to go in the wings, right? There's always someone who wants to get into game dev. And with that, there's always trouble with, you know, people being underpaid or being taken advantage of. This is where, you know, crunch culture comes into effect. There was a report recently, just as an aside, that Halo Infinite is being made under crunch, basically conditions. The entire time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, salary. This is actually not something unique to the gaming industry, but and people have started sharing their salaries online using the hashtag #GameDevPaidMe to kind of help even the playing field of people knowing what they're worth, right? You see this also a lot in other industries. I think Google had a document that went around their whole company where everyone listed their salary just to kind of even it out, and then everyone got in trouble for doing that. You'll find that a lot of CEOs and owners of companies would prefer people don't discuss their salary. In another life, I had an exact scenario where I had management tell me to tell my employees to stop talking about their salary. And I went, I can't. That's not legal.
Yeah. Yep.
So, it's people have been kind of coming forward and trying to say what they're worth. One noted person, you know, and there's also that kind of thing of, you know, what does a cis white male get paid versus, you know, a black or a person of color, a woman, you know, someone trans, right? That can all play into salary. So they're even exposing that too, but it's not great. I mean, at least for this guy, he's finally made it after what, 9 years, but you know, well, his first three jobs were maxing out at about 65K. And that's pretty low for development, I want to say, especially for the West Coast. Yeah, right.
Yep.
Yeah, at West Coast prices. I mean, I know, like, if you're $65,000 a year is a lot of money to a lot of people, and I don't want to minimize that. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about, especially the Bay Area tech, I mean, $120,000 is barely enough to get you maybe a one bedroom.
No, you don't. You don't even get a one bedroom. You get a studio apartment, and you're still sharing it with somebody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think in some neighborhoods, $100,000 is the poverty line in these areas where these people are making this much. So they're it's severely underpaid for the area. Like, I'm glad you recognize it. It is a lot of money, but also these people are so overworked.
Yeah.
So literally exploited. And because it's a passion industry, it's, I get to work on games. This is so cool. Oh, awesome. I'm going to need you to work 80, you know, 100 hour weeks. I'll buy you dinner. But, you know,
we have a ping pong table.
Exactly. Woo! Let's go for drinks. And you can make up the time later. Like, these, it's so manipulative.
There's never later. There's never, and when there is later, it is years down the line when there's later.
It's so terrible. And it's really good to bring this to light. It's good to bring salaries to light, which in terms of my exposure is new because I know the whole biggest issue is crunch, right? The problem is crunch. The problem is, you know, having to work nights and weekends and then companies getting away with saying, we never tell you to, but come on, right? Yeah. Come on.
Right. Like, the issue is, they say yes, they never tell you to, and then there is evidence of people passing you up for promotions or everything else because you didn't work overtime.
Another thing with that too, right, is, oh no, I lost my thought while I was talking about it.
Let me jump in. So we've also said this, like, and funny enough, surprise, all three of us work in a sort of tech sector. The problem, there's this greater thought about, like, the software developer industry, like all these programmers and developers should come up with a union in general, not even just the games industry. And honestly, that might work. Might be a good cause here. I've been in part of many different companies and in different types of pay and situations. It's all over the place. It is definitely a giant, like, what's happening? What's going on? You don't know. Everyone tries to make sure you get paid less. And then when I went to the other side of management and you understand how much they're just not paying other people. I'm like, I was like, you gave that to them with a straight face? That's incredible.
It's pretty bad. I mean, and what I was going to say too was, I think game development too, this is, again, not unique to game development, but maybe almost it's a little more prevalent there, is that it's highly contract and seasonal based, right? Yes. Studios staff up for a project, they let everyone go. I know a lot of instances of game devs getting out of game dev once they get older because they just want a stable job. And it's, you know, challenging too, right? Because we talk about the Bay Area, you know, that's where most of the studios are. That is spreading out, but, you know, there's a couple studios in Boston, there's a couple studios in Austin, Texas. But, but, you know, once you get to a point where, you know, you're limiting your options and you kind of just all have to go there, because if you're getting laid off every 6 to 8 months because the project's over, you want to be in the place that has the most options. And then that place also happens to be some of the most expensive real estate on earth. It makes a tough challenge for game dev. And I don't necessarily know the answer to that. I'm not sure, you know, something that's never really been super exposed to me, and I don't know if either of you know, how does Japanese game dev do in terms of payment? Like, I know Japanese development has a lot of, on the mangaka and the anime side, has a lot of these issues too, but I actually don't know a lot about how game dev goes.
Yeah, I don't know, honestly. And funny enough, maybe I actually can just go ahead and jump into that and research it. But I don't know. It's too quiet is the problem, right? the issue, that whole, because it is a cultural thing too. They don't like, you know, office environments over there don't like you talking a hint of how much you don't like working at the company that you're in. You get blacklisted for everything, like, from almost everywhere, if people hear that you were talking badly about the company you're working in.
Honestly, I don't know if it's that much different.
Right. It can't be much better, yeah. Right?
I yeah. remember reading well, something from the, I forgot the name, but he's the guy who started Monolith Soft, the one who directed Xenogears. And went on to leave and create his own studio to create Xenosaga and now, you know, Xenoblade. But one of his founding principles with his company, and also when Nintendo kind of, I don't know if they straight out acquired them, but whatever, was that he said no overtime. He said, I don't want crunch.
Well, no overtime or no Japanese overtime?
Maybe it's Japanese overtime. I don't know. But I thought that was kind of interesting is that he started, and also just to his credit too, when he started his studio, he was like, I want, and he even began it with Xenosaga. He said, I want young people to make the decisions. I want young people to make the design. And I guess that's been one of the things about his studio too, that it's been led a lot by the younger staff, which I thought was kind of cool. Maybe because they have the energy to do that all too. But yeah, so I imagine it's a problem. The salary man, right, is such a known thing now. The anime industry is truly exploitative. Very bad. Maybe worse than the game industry. I don't know if you can compare them so much, but the anime industry is very, 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 very bad.
Yeah, it's an art industry, right? And it's sometimes tough to say a person who is coding is creating art, but they are, right? Games are art.
But usually it's to feed the machine, right?
Yeah,
where the anime is more so entertainment and much more subjective, and then unfortunately much less valued. Got to buy those Blu-rays, guys. That's how they get their money. Gotta buy the Blu-rays.
In this week's iteration of James Yells at Gen Z on TikTok, there was a TikTok I saw where someone goes, you know you're OG anime fan when you remember this. And it was like, episode one, Square, Ing Sub, XDCC. So it was basically like, it was like a torrent naming file for a system.
Oh, sure.
And I'm like, that's not OG, you son of a bitch. Mm-hmm. $30 for three episodes is OG.
$30 for three episodes of One Piece.
Yeah.
You know that doesn't cost a lot.
No. Yeah, exactly. Oh, boy.
Yeah. But one thing. Go ahead, James.
Go ahead. Absolutely. Say your thought, because I was going to transition after this.
Yeah. Going back into it too, it was funny because I did get, when I was looking for jobs, I was reaching, I did reach out to some gaming companies, and it was funny because when I emailed about certain salaries and stuff like that, and then I brought up certain crunch and stuff in the email, they just stopped responding. both companies, actually. It was very funny. I was just like, well, I guess that's a touchy subject.
Don't want people who ask questions.
Exactly. Yeah,
the only person it helps is the company.
I think the lesson here is
companies are evil. We're the enemy.
Yeah they are. I'm not gonna lie. Yeah, they are. But also, talking about salaries, being open about those things amongst each other is important, even if you can do it anonymously. I've always felt a little weird about sharing my salary, despite being such a proponent of this, and in no fucking way am I gonna tell you what I make on this stream. But I think amongst a corporate, or amongst a employment force into a specific company, right, it's important to share that information.
Yeah,
because it only improves people. I think there's always that retaliation of, you get paid what, how dare you, and it's really shouldn't be that, because you as employees shouldn't be against each other. It's you versus management.
It's a management problem. My stance at work in my previous job was if any of my developers asked, I was always fine with telling them average salaries of the company, just because I can't control if they how they'll react to other developers. But, you know, giving them that, like, ballpark so they know if they're under or over was, like, a nice little thing for them to push forward and argue for when it came time for their reviews.
Why is it a fight?
That's it. Yeah. My thing with the, you know, with peers, I am not shy about it because I also believe that, you know, hiding it doesn't make anybody, like, it doesn't help anybody, any of your fellow peers. So share it when you can.
I think for me, it comes from a sense of imposter syndrome, which is everyone would say, he's not worth that. I mean, but that's my own cross to bear. But
what a nice cross to bear.
Yes and no. But anyway, transition go here. Speaking of games that were probably almost certainly made under crunch with underpaid salarymen, mm-hmm. Resident Evil Village came out.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I finished it today. Sorry, Charles.
No, it's okay. That's fine. I was watching a different Let's Player. A couple.
I actually might play it again, which I ended up doing this with 7. But it's sitting at like an 84 on Metacritic, 8.5 on the user score, and then 84 from critics, which is pretty good, right? That's a good game. I've seen a lot of talk about people being like, it's not that good of a Resident Evil game. Oh, it's not very scary. I don't know. There were scary moments in it, but it definitely felt a little more like they were just like, this is the scary section. This is the action section. Yeah.
I agree. And
I did read an article that basically said something like they followed feedback that RE7 was too scary. So they kind of pulled back from that. But this is, by all intents and purposes, a spiritual successor to Resident Evil 4. This game is Resident Evil 4 too. I want to be very clear about it.
Yeah.
From literally having the same inventory management system as Resident Evil 4. I don't know. Charles, go ahead. I mean, if you have, I can keep going because I've played the game, but like, what are your impressions from watching it?
You know, as a person that doesn't like playing scary games, but is completely okay with watching people play scary games, I'm about halfway through watching a playthrough. The first I've gotten. Well, okay. Mm-hmm. I think I'm more at like 70% of the way through. I agree. One, this game is not so scary that I was like, I could actually just play this game myself. And it's one of those things where it's, the scary sections are when you don't have nearly as many weapons. Yeah. But in this game, they give you a lot of weapons. They give you a lot of bullets. It's not so scary when you can definitely just kind of shoot your way through the problem, right? And like the sections with like, you know, Resident Evil 2, Resident Evil 3 type of like, man, that unstoppable person that chases you, I feel they feel either too short or just not frequent enough for you to be like, this is horrifying.
Yeah. I would say there's kind of one, there's a mansion that's about, it's early midway through the game, right? On the small half of 50% of the game, right? There's a mansion, which is, it's the scary section. You don't have your gun, and you're forced to just kind of wander around. It's a lot of, if you remember in Resident Evil 7, when you're locked in that escape room and have to solve that, it's kind of like that, but instead of just being body horror, there's actually a presence chasing you and making it bad. So,
yeah.
It's still, I don't know, I had a lot of fun. I think, to your point, like if you're being a lot of ammo, it's one of those things where if you're good at getting headshots, you will have a lot of ammo. But if you shoot in the body, you will run out of ammo really quick. I was playing on mouse and keyboard, so it was a little easier for me. I can imagine on console, it's a little more difficult. It's just, yeah, the monsters are tanky. And I was playing on the standard one too, right? Resident Evil zombies usually take, I don't know, 3 to 4 headshots. I feel like in this game, they can take anywhere from 5 to 9, depending on how upgraded the weapon you are using. Like, wow. Obviously, the sniper rifle would take them out in 1 or 2 shots, depending on the enemy.
Does that make it fun?
Sometimes. It can make it... It makes the game a lot more about balancing, right? Where it's like, I have to use this weapon in this situation, and I have to use that weapon in this situation. Like, towards the end of the game, I had a point where I'm like, oh boy, I have 6 shotgun shells and 20 sniper rifle shots. Mm-hmm. I have to think very carefully about how I use them.
Sure.
And I think, Charles, that resource management, ammo management, that does get lessened as the game goes on, because there stops being as much things to discover.
Yeah.
You start retreading the same ground, and you're like, oh, I don't have as much ammo as I did anymore.
Yeah.
Luckily they're nice about like giving you a lot of stuff right before a boss, but I think maybe on harder difficulties that can get challenging. I did actually load the new game plus just because I wanted to see how it was, and bumped it up to the hardcore difficulty. And I've actually had a little trouble. I haven't been able to survive the initial Lycan attack.
Ooh.
Which is weird because it's a scripted loss. And I'm like, how far do I have to get in this to to get to the scripted loss? I keep dying. So I don't know. There's something to it. And I don't know. It'll be fun. Obviously, there's also the ability with this challenge point system. There are challenges in the game, and they give you a certain amount of points. And with that, you can unlock better weapons or infinite ammo just to make the game a lot easier. But I don't know. Narratively, I think it's a great game. I'm not going to get into spoilers because I do think it's actually interesting in the direction they're taking the Resident Evil series. Ooh. But yeah, Charles, how far are you in your watch through?
We're heading towards a factory.
Okay, so you have you're getting there. Yeah, they explain a lot in this game about towards the end about Ethan and who he is, and I think it's actually very interesting.
Yeah, I mean they definitely need to explain it, just because they've been a lot more there's been a lot more hints of how unordinary he is, so it's good to go through all that.
Definitely. Yeah, it definitely contextualizes a lot of Seven, which is good. It's always good when a game makes the story of a previous game better, right? So I give Village a lot of credit for that. I give Village a lot of credit, and also a negative for Lady Dimitrescu being the first boss you fight, but then her also not being in the rest of the game, which is kind of sad.
Yeah. The greatest thing, I think, it rivals Pokemon Go was how unified the internet was on this very tall and statuesque woman. And then she is the first boss. So it's like the enthusiasm kind of leaves a little bit with that.
I will say that dungeon is probably the longest, except for the fourth one, which is the one you're heading towards, Charles. That's the longest dungeon. So the first one is like the second longest. So yeah. they do give her a lot of time to breathe, which is good. And I like the castle that she's in. It felt very classic Resident Evil. The third dungeon area is, God, if they gave me a boat and a harpoon to throw it, it might as well have been Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so funny how many times I'm playing this game and I'm like, this is Resident Evil 4. And Resident Evil 4, that is Chris Redfield, right? As the lead?
No, it's Leon. Resident Evil
4. Oh, it's Leon. Thank you. I was like,
with that haircut.
Yeah.
That's right. Because I'm like, Chris Redfield is not the guy from Resident Evil 4, right?
Yeah. Chris shows up at 5. So it's like 1 Code Veronica and then 5, basically, for Chris.
Okay. And he's all neck.
Yeah.
He's literally just a neck. Just like, oof, how did that happen? That's not Resident Evil 1, Chris.
In the run-up to this, I actually replayed 7 again. I beat that earlier last week. And I played 3, which is something I've just been putting the remake of 3. mm-hmm. which is something I've actually just kind of been putting off for a while for some reason. I think it had lukewarm reviews when it came out, of it just being kind of short, so I didn't really get around to it. But I was like, I want to play a Resident Evil game. And I think I ran through it in about 8 hours.
Yeah.
That's not that bad. For a Resident Evil, don't overstay your welcome.
I mean, it also came out. I mean, it was also a $60 game, right? But
sure.
But I don't know. Resident Evil games, I'm discovering, or at least these new Resident Evil games, right? They have a lot of replayability for me. I've played 7 probably about 4 or 5 times now.
Holy cow.
I like 7. The shooting mechanics in 7 and 8 are satisfying. I like doing them.
I just got my VR adapter, so I've been planning on playing 7 in VR, and I've been told I will pee myself.
It's a pretty spooky game.
Yeah. Will I pee myself?
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm thinking of a certain boss, so yes.
Well, I was going to say, if he doesn't do it in like the first hour, I think he might be safe.
Hmm.
Yeah. Well, there might be some specific phobias.
Well, the lantern area.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I did pee myself during Silent Hill. In the very first game, I remember when you're in that diner and the things crash in, I peed on myself.
I was waiting for I peed hard.
Yeah.
I was in fourth grade or fifth grade, it was a sleepover.
I thought this was like you were a teenager.
Not as a teenager.
You're fine. Anything under the age of 12 and peeing yourself is gravy.
I made it through Fatal Frame without peeing myself. But there was a boss. Oh, no. There was a boss I had to have my mom sit in the room with because I was too scared to play it. And then I beat the boss and I was like, God, Mom, I can do this. And then I had
I will say, so I was playing it. I was playing a little bit last night and... I was disquieted going to bed because I stopped during the second dungeon, which is the scary dungeon.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree.
So,
I completely agree.
So I went to bed and I was like, I'm gonna leave a couple of these lights on tonight. So it's not an unscary game. Sure. There's definitely some jump scares. Literally programmed to be as such.
Yeah.
So you go fuck. Go fuck you game. Yeah. But I don't know. I had a great time with it. I don't know if I like it better than 8. I think time will tell on that.
Sure.
I definitely feel like, well, just the fact that you can skip cutscenes makes it a better game than 7. But yeah, I don't know. I 7 feels maybe more like a more condensed story. It's a little more narratively focused, but it's also short. 8 feels a bit more expanded, you know, to grandiose scale, but doesn't necessarily connect all those threads of why is it so grandiose. So
sure.
I don't know. It has its negatives, but it's also a fun game. I would play it. I liked it better than 3, which but Resident Evil 8 thumbs up from me.
If this was Ubisoft, they wouldn't make another one.
No.
They would turn it into a free... How do you turn Resident Evil into a free-to-play?
Chapters.
Do you pay for the ammo?
Haven't they done that? Isn't
or the
that
ink
that's...
ribbons?
No, you just gotcha systems. But also...
What do you gotcha? Different guns?
Zombie types.
Oh.
Also, you could do playable characters.
Sure. Milk that background.
And then costumes.
Yeah, I mean costumes. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Costumes.
Yeah.
There has to be swimsuits. Mm-hmm. It's not worth it if there's no swimsuits.
Japanese.
Yeah. And then you could do like swimsuit, unstoppable stalking monster. Be a tyrant or an ex.
Put everyone in swimsuits.
Put Nemesis in a tasteful two-piece.
I support it 100%. That could get some money.
I don't know. I was thinking about this today. It's like, I don't know when I turned into a Resident Evil fan because it was a game series I never really got into until 7. 7 came out before 2 remake, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 7 was the first kind of Resident Evil I ever really played. You know, because I was not a PlayStation boy.
Sure.
So, yeah. But, yeah, it's Resident Evil 9 is going to come based on the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to it. I also look forward to them remaking 4, even though they kind of did, and it was called 8.
Yeah, they definitely, like, the people I was watching were all just like, this is just Resident Evil 4.
It yeah. does make a lot of sense why they didn't announce a Resident Evil 4 remake. Because, so we might get that in, like, another 2. They're definitely going to do Code Veronica next. Give 4 a little more time to breathe and then do it. Because, yeah, I tried playing 4 fairly recently, and, man, those controls do not feel good.
Listen, and but they revolutionized controls at the time, and now they're dated. Agree.
Yeah, they're terrible. Although I have to say,
controls were, you know,
they could just take the engine for this game, and now they have 4. That's all they need. So we'll see what happens.
I think it's great. I'm so happy to hear it's good.
Yeah.
I hope I will one day play it, but I have to beat 7 in VR and not pee myself. Fair.
Well, see. One last thing. Speaking of body horror.
Oh.
Venom, Let There Be Carnage trailer came out this week.
Oh, yes.
And it looks like hot shit. It looks... and not in the good way.
Okay, and question, because I was watching the whole thing thinking, where's Spider-Man?
did you see the original Venom, Andy?
No. Okay. But isn't Spider-Man in Venom?
No, Andy. This is a brave new Venom world that has nothing to do with Spider-Man. Also, it takes place in San Francisco. You know, where Venom's known to be, not New York City.
Does it? Isn't Venom Spider-Man?
Yes, Andy.
Yeah. Wait, not that schlub is Spider-Man?
No, there's no Spider-Man in the Venom universe, at least as of revealed. Mm-hmm. In this world, the look of Venom is completely... incidental to any other web-based superheroes.
Yeah. I'll just say, knowing nothing about it from the trailer that has like tonal whiplash, it's all over the place. It had a bit of like kind of like a, it's kind of a lazy comparison now, but I got like a 90s vibe from it. What does that mean? I don't know. Like it's dumb and it's okay with it kind of thing. But then you get stuff wildly different, and I'm just,
Andy, remember, Venom, the original Venom, made $1 billion. So just to be clear,
and it didn't
where we
have Spider-Man?
Did not have Spider-Man, and it had Tom Hardy just doing a terrible American accent, which. Does he talk in this trailer? Now that I'm thinking about it, I don't think he does.
He does. Actually, he does. He does.
A very short amount of times, though.
Wow.
Yeah.
$1 billion.
Yeah. So, yeah, we have Carnage being introduced in this one. And I don't know. He looks cool. I still haven't worked up the enthusiasm to watch Venom 1. I don't know if I'll work up. I heard the best take, which is if this was on HBO Max like next week, I might watch it. I don't know if I can work myself to a theater to watch Venom, Let There Be Carnage.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised you haven't seen it because I watched it on the airplane.
Is that when you were going to Japan?
No, when I was going to Seattle.
Oh,
like not this Seattle, like. With us as a group when we went to PAX a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was. I watched the first movie on an airplane, and
was it bad?
Yeah. I know it was fine. It was completely. it was an okay movie. My thing about it was it was a good first try. No need to make another one.
And it made $1 billion. Jesus.
Yeah. The thing about Venom as a comic book character, right, is that he is a villain to Spider-Man, but also an anti-hero.
He very particularly hates Spider-Man, but everyone else he's cool with.
Yeah. it's a funny situation to be in. So you could enjoy him being a good guy sometimes. But I'm only sad in that Carnage in terms of looking cool and me being a little kid when I first saw him, I was like, this is the coolest villain ever. I want Carnage to be the guy everywhere.
Is he the red one?
Yeah, the red one.
90s ultra violence. Yeah.
I remember the red SNES cartridge.
Yeah. And yet he's here and not in the MCU, where he probably would have shown up more than once than just this movie. So I'm very sad about that. But okay, I'll take it.
They haven't ruled this out as being a part of the MCU.
Maybe they shouldn't, just as a quality control thing.
I remember a Sony exec. So you have to remember this, right? Sony owns the rights to Spider-Man, and they will continue to own those rights because just to fuck over Disney and Marvel, basically. I mean, they knocked it out of the park with Into the Spider-Verse, though, so I can't give them too much shit.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. There was a Sony exec who was basically saying, oh, you know, it was a greater MCU scope, and then Kevin Feige went in and knocked that the fuck off. statements. So I don't know. There's still a chance it could be in the MCU, but maybe it's not. Who knows? This could be the Venomverse, right? There's also Morbius coming out in 2022.
That's true.
Spider-Man's other villain that everyone loves, Morbius, the science vampire.
Yeah,
I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But I just wanted to bring it up because, frankly, it just does not look good to me. But I don't know. We'll see what else is in theaters. Maybe I'll get bored and go see it.
Yeah.
Well, this has been another episode of Add to Party, a friendship simulator masquerading as a news show. I've been your host, James Hartwell. Which I said it like a robot. I'm real.
Oh no.
The 5G is taking control. That's what the nap was. Bill Gates asserting dominance. And I've been joined by
Charles Yamott. And I was joined by
Andy K.
Now I need you to say okay and the last four digits of your social security number, and we can end this podcast.
Well, I guess you only need the last four.
Have a good night, everyone.
Yeah. Good night, guys.